All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are talking about The Eyes of Tammy Faye. Of course, about infamous televangelists Jim and Tammy Faye Baker. This is going to be an interesting conversation to have for sure. Joining me to talk about it is Daryl Armstrong returning to the show. And I've been looking forward to this one. You know, Michael Showalter is kind of a personal hero of mine. I just have absolutely loved him ever since The State back on MTV and then Wet Hot American Summer and then the Stella stuff. Some of my favorite things of all time, honestly. And I've been following, of course, everything he's been doing recently. You know, Hello, My Name is Doris and The Big Sick. Let's not talk about The Lovebirds. But, you know, I'm really excited anytime I see that Michael Showalter has something coming out. And, you know, hopefully this is a big success for him. As a longtime fan, I'm always excited to see him growing and doing new things as a filmmaker. So I'm looking forward to talking about this. So before we get to the conversation, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts, whether that's Apple Podcasts or Pocket Casts or Spotify, wherever. Make sure you're subscribed. And of course, you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser or Good Pods. Or if there's another app that has a five-star button you can hit, hit that one. Also, share the show with your friends. Follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. And don't forget to join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. So, let's talk about The Eyes of Tammy Faye. All right, so we got Daryl Armstrong back with us to talk about The Eyes of Tammy Faye. Daryl, how is it going?
Pretty well, David. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, I'm very happy to have you back on the show. And of course, you know, just last month, we had a couple of winners from your film festival on the show, which was a cool episode. That was like a first time kind of thing. And that all worked out well. And, you know, that movie, The Empty Man, is a movie that seems to continue to be a part of the conversation, even months and months and months later. People are still talking about that.
Yeah, I still see conversations pop up on Twitter and online from it. People just discovering it now still.
Well, hopefully they check out our old episode on it. But today, this is a much different movie from The Empty Man that we're going to talk about with The Eyes of Tammy Faye. First thing, before we start getting into some puzzle pieces, was this a big, heavily awaited movie for you?
That's a bit of a complicated question, actually. Yes and no. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a household. My parents watched Jim and Tammy Faye's program, the PTL Club, religiously. Mm-hmm. Every day. It was
like literally religiously or religiously as in a lot?
Both.
Yes.
Okay. Actually, and the first real vacation I remember when I was maybe 4 or 5 years old was going to their theme park that they had built.
Oh, wow.
I believe it was in North Carolina. I don't remember a whole lot, but I remember going. I remember, you know, my parents being super excited about it, having a Christian theme park to go to and vacation at. So I grew up very familiar with, you know, the real Jim and Tammy Faye, at least from their public personas on television.
Sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was kind of interested in seeing what the filmmakers would do in telling their story. It's not usually the type of film I gravitate to normally, but it was a very interesting watch.
Yeah, I wasn't sure going into this because, you know, I love Michael Showalter, who directed this, and mostly for very off-the-wall, wacky comedy stuff like Wet Hot American Summer and The State and some of the stuff that he was involved with over the years. So I really wasn't sure what the tone was going to be here going into it, if it was going to be just a total farce, just, you know, completely making fun of these characters, these people, or if it was going to kind of, you know, try to tell their story, but with some humor added into it, or where exactly it was going to go. So that was definitely a question I had going into this thing, which it turns out mostly, I think, you know, we'll get into this as we're going through pieces and what we thought of the movie, but I think mostly it's a performance show piece is what I think is what we ended up ultimately getting.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, Jessica Chastain is amazing, I think, in the film. And I think Andrew Garfield actually did a really bang-up job, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really like him a lot. He has been in some really interesting roles over the last couple of years. And, yeah, I mean, Jessica Chastain is, like, that's the standout for sure. But I just think he's great in this as well. But, you know, we will lay on the praise to those two along the way through the conversation. Let's start getting into some puzzle pieces here. What do you have for your first piece?
My first piece, and I realized when I was writing out my notes for this, I think I actually put them in basically chronological order.
Okay.
So I'm going all the way back to Citizen Kane.
Okay.
I'm not sure how directly it influenced the film, other than, you know, it's been a building block for hundreds, thousands of films over the years, just as a, you know, a pillar now of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
But there was, you know, a couple things. The story being told of someone who had created this giant empire, and ultimately is left kind of unfulfilled at the end, I think is similar in tone. And there was also, especially in one scene in the baker's home, I don't know, it's about 2/3 of the way through the film.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the camera angles Showalter used reminded me of camera angles that Orson Welles had used in Citizen Kane. Just a slight tilting. It just makes you feel like things are a little off, you know, in this enormous mansion, you know, the Bakers had that they were living in. You know, it is absolutely beautiful, but just tilting the camera a little bit gives you that feeling of unease.
Sure. That sense, even though everything is so, like, seemingly perfect and huge and beautiful, but it's off kilter.
Exactly. Exactly. So that really just popped out to me. I should be better about talking about some of the mechanics of filmmaking, like camera angles and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But it's not something I usually focus on story more, especially when I'm you know, reviewing. But that just popped into my head as I was watching it. You know, it was specifically the scene where I believe Jim was trying to acquire some funding from somebody in a meeting in their home, and Tammy's trying to listen in and observe, and you just get this sense of awkwardness and unease from it.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's a great piece, and I hadn't thought of that, but it definitely fits that rise to unfulfilled, but also, you know, as big as you can kind of go in that particular field, kind of a story. So yeah, I think that's a great piece to kick it off with. And I'll go to my first piece, which is the first one that I thought of, and a movie I hadn't seen in a long time, but I rewatched it yesterday for this conversation, and that is 1992's Leap of Faith with Steve Martin.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely a great, if not influence, at least a great companion piece for this movie, for The Eyes of Tammy Faye. Steve Martin, of course, is kind of a traveling grifter who makes his way into becoming a televangelist. And I think both of these movies kind of have this thing about them where it becomes almost difficult to separate telling a story about this kind of a character from, you almost still have to celebrate the character, even if their intentions might not necessarily be good. And I think that kind of comes from the gospel music and just the bigness and the theatrical aspect of what they do up on that stage, that they become just so fun to watch that even if there's, you know, a scam underneath everything that they're doing, it still becomes just somebody who you just love to watch and you're almost rooting for, even though you're not rooting for them. But it's a very complicated thing. And I think it's interesting that both of these movies kind of do that with these characters. And then on another side note, both of their fortunes turn around after a vehicle breaks down. So that is another connection nice. Between the two as well.
Yeah, it's been, I can't remember when I saw that last. It's probably been almost 20 years. That's a great one. To what you're saying, that it's almost like the entertainment factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we cheer on people who are entertaining, even if we don't necessarily morally or ethically agree with them at times.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a difficult line to walk there, but I think it's that charisma that it just kind of connects with you, and it really goes to show why that kind of person is able to connect with people so well. And I think it also speaks another thing to the bigness of the performances. I mean, you know, Jessica Chastain, as we were saying before we started getting into puzzle pieces, is just, you know, phenomenal in this movie. And Steve Martin in Leap of Faith is so, so good and so, so watchable. You know, he's just, and he's kind of that in everything he did through that time period of the, late 80s into the early 90s. Just everything he does, you just cannot take your eyes off of him. He's so much fun to watch. Yeah. And I think that makes him perfect for this kind of role. And I don't know that Jessica Chastain, I love her as an actress. I think she's great, but I wouldn't have immediately thought of her. But as it turns out, she's just perfect for it.
Yeah, I think she really nailed it. And it's interesting, some of what you were just saying there, mm-hmm. I think leads into my next piece.
Let's go for
perfectly,
it.
Which was The Music Man.
Okay.
Again, a story of this entertaining grifter who, you know, very charismatic and, you know, can walk in somewhere and, you know, say, let's do this and this, you know, XYZ, and it'll solve your problems. You know, I think it's a very American thing. See throughout film and music and, popular culture over the years. We had in The Music Man, Harold Hill come in and he uses music to kind of gain his audience. Similarly, with the Bakers, they used music. Tammy, of course, sang, and puppets. As they at the beginning of their career, would travel town to town, you know, visiting churches and putting on these entertaining, puppet shows and events that were, you know, supposed to be of a religious nature, but as you were just saying, it almost in practice is more of an entertainment.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, I think there's the film certainly touches at questions about how sincere Tammy Faye's faith was.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a lot more ambiguous on Jim Baker, how sincere he was about, you know, his beliefs and faith and what he was doing. Because, you know, he talks about with Vincent D'Onofrio, who played Jerry Falwell, the size of their audience, you know, and mm-hmm. was that the goal, to have that power and influence? You know, I think the film's a little bit more ambiguous on that point, but we do see Chastain's portrayal of Tammy Faye. She did a few voiceovers throughout the film as she's praying, and I think it wants us to believe she had a more sincere, you know, faith.
Sure.
But, you know, back to the Music Man, you know, Harold Hill's character, you know, manufactured his own belief in what he was selling.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what he sold to people. And of course, at the end of that film, it ends happily and he has a change of heart and comes back and takes responsibility and everybody lives happily ever after. Not quite so much the case here, but.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, and I do think the movie maybe lets her off the hook a little bit much, but I mean, at the same time, you know, it does have to have that moral center for there to be a character to kind of follow along with. So it makes sense. And certainly she is the main character here and it's not really both of them, it's her. And so it's kind of this whole situation has kind of happened to her in a way. So, you know, I think it does make sense. And, you know, that's actually a good transition into my next piece here, which is a much newer movie, but 2019's Bombshell, another movie built around like a transformative performance from Charlize Theron as Megyn Kelly, and you know another conservative figure.
I actually haven't seen that.
Oh, it's an interesting movie. It see, and that's the thing. It's like a great performance in a movie that I'm not quite sure knew what it was doing with its character and whether or not it was letting her off the hook. So basically you've got this conservative figure who, yeah, is kind of the better person, you know, comparatively speaking of the people around her. But in real life, is Megyn Kelly a good person? You know, can we really even answer that question? I don't really know. But, you know, I think it kind of tries to treat Tammy Faye in a similar way as the way that they treated Megyn Kelly in Bombshell.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know. I'll have to check that out. I remember seeing trailers for it, but then completely fell off my radar.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. I mean, like I said, if nothing else, performance is really great.
Yeah.
But what do you got for your next piece?
Sure. This is kind of a combination of films. Basically, Stephen King horror films, like from the 80s, and the many kind of knockoffs that were created, you know, based on his style. I remember, you know, growing up seeing a lot of them, and often they would feature, you know, a minister or a preacher who was either this, you know, traveling evangelist or small town preacher who often is just plainly interested in you know, power or wealth, influence. Going back to that brief little conversation we see in the film between Andrew Garfield and Vincent D'Onofrio about you know, trying to one up each other on how big of a reach they have.
Sure.
And I think certainly when I was growing up watching a lot of these horror films, having grown up in a Pentecostal, you know, Christian home and environment, when I saw these films, often they would have these, you know, small town preachers in the same sort of setting, and it felt to me, you know, as a kid, like this was almost an attack on like what I know and who I, my family and who I grew up with.
Sure.
And we actually see at the beginning of this film, Tammy Faye as a child, and this kind of super Pentecostal environment, which harkens back, I think, to a lot of these kind of horror films that featured somewhat shady pastors and ministers. Some of them were just incompetent. Some were more, you know, clearly viciously evil.
Sure.
You know, think about films like Needful Things, Children of the Corn. And a lot of them had, you know, just small bit parts, a scene or two, you know, that this preacher would have. But I think what those films were doing was speaking, you know, metaphorically about kind of the dark underbelly of a lot of, you know, this traveling evangelists and often Christian faith, which, you know, this film takes a look at. It's not so much, you know, a horror film,
right?
Unless you count existential angst as horror,
sure.
Which I think it can be.
Sure, yeah, and I could imagine, like, that must be, you know, coming, because I'm completely a non-religious person, and I was, you know, brought up Jewish, and like I can just imagine, like, seeing those kinds of characters in horror movies, and that is such, like, you know, those kinds of characters have such power over the people who believe in them. So for that to be the place to find that horror must be kind of a powerful thing, I would imagine.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and that's something we don't see a whole lot in this film, but there are definitely a few, like, montage bits, and scenes where we see Jim and Tammy Faye, you know, broadcasting. And you mm-hmm. see there's one shot of, you know, this row of phone banks, you know, and for a time they really did have a lot of influence over, you know, people, whether it was, you know, as we were talking about before, more entertaining. They still had that influence, you know, and they still
sure.
raked in tons of money from people who, you know, are honestly being taken advantage of, you know,
yeah.
elderly and poor, you know, people who wanted some sort of hope and think that they're, you know, contributing.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is, of course, the question, you know, did they do some good things?
Right.
You know, the film makes a point to feature Tammy Faye interviewing a homosexual man who had gotten AIDS, which was a huge deal for
sure.
any
Absolutely.
Conservative Christian in the 80s. That was very much against the grain. So, you know, nothing's ever really black and white.
Exactly.
But,
yeah.
You know, those kind of I think horror films were definitely moving and asking questions that were counter the conservative religious culture, you know, in the 80s. And I think
sure.
this film continues to do that in a different genre, and by looking at, you know, a real life event and story. But I think it picks up on some of those threads.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, for my next piece, I'm going to go with one. So this actually could have went well with your Citizen Kane piece, but this is a little bit of a cheat because I actually did see an interview where Michael Showalter kind of mentioned this one, but I'm going to use it anyway. And that is Paul Thomas Anderson's Boogie Nights.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, this movie really is a story about somebody, you know, coming up in a particular, you know, aspect of the world of entertainment and getting everything they thought they wanted and all of that success kind of destroying them, basically. And, you know, it's a very similar character arc to what happens at Boogie Nights. And again, like you talked about with Citizen Kane, just, you know, that total rocket to the
yeah.
top of your particular industry and still being unfulfilled. And of course, all of that success being the thing that brings you right back down. So yeah, Boogie Nights is my next piece, which is, you know, I find that comes up quite a bit on this show because it is, you know, Paul Thomas Anderson in general, is such an influential filmmaker of the last, you know, 30 years. It's one that comes up a lot as a puzzle
yeah,
piece.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good one. Yeah. If I would have thought about it a little more, that might have made my list.
Nice. All right, well, what do you got next?
Next is a fairly recent one from 2012 that I had just seen for the first time, actually just a few weeks ago, which maybe why it stuck out in my mind so much. But it's a indie film. I think it debuted at Sundance, called Compliance. This was similarly based on a true story of this guy who, I guess he had done this over a series of like 15 years. He would call small businesses, and he would pose as either a police officer or someone from like corporate management of like a fast food chain or grocery store, mm-hmm. and make the employees, you know, who think they're talking to someone in power, just do, you know, terrible things. Like the story the film tells of this fast food chain manager. She gets convinced by this guy who's posing as a police officer to take one of her female employees into the back, completely undress, and do a strip search of this young woman. And it goes on from there. It actually gets a lot worse. As I was watching the film, like, I'm like, okay, this is supposedly based on a true story. And this manager actually has her fiance at the time come drive to the store and help do this strip search. And he winds up actually, I think in the film, the guy has the fiance spank this young lady naked, mm-hmm. over his lap. You know, he's posing as a police officer. And I'm like, okay, that was embellished. And I looked up the actual events of the story, and it was actually worse.
Okay.
I believe, you know, he had the guy ask the young woman to give him fellatio.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, describing all of that, it just kind of blew my mind. This, you know, Isaac Tammy Faye actually, I think, didn't go quite as dark, you know,
right.
But it reminded me of the film, because the actress who plays the store manager, Ann Dowd,
mm-hmm.
she won a Best Supporting Actress award for it from the National Board of Review. They're both these, you know, looks at these women who, you know, Ann Dowd's character there and Tammy Faye, who are in a system being abused by, you know, men and the system itself, you know, while trying to more or less sincerely, you know, do a good job, be, you know, good at what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And both films end on the woman being interviewed in this, you know, mock news interview setting.
Sure.
Which I found was really interesting. And going back to something you had said earlier, it brings up this question of, yeah, you were, you know, in basically a bad situation, but what was your responsibility? You know, what is this character's responsibility in what happened?
Right.
So that's what stood out to me from that.
Okay.
Film.
Yeah, it sounds like a really interesting film. I haven't seen it, but yeah, I like that. Like that whole, like, are we letting this person off the hook? What is their role in all of this? And kind of leaving that open ended. And there's a lot to explore with a character like
that. I think Tammy Faye here kind of wants to have it a little bit of both ways.
Sure. Yeah.
Because while it does have that, you know, end scene, it also, right before that, kind of gives her own triumphant gospel number she gets to sing.
Which is half
even
in her
if
head,
it's own,
but
yeah,
still.
In her own head. You know, as a viewer, again, it's entertaining, and I feel it kind of wants to give us that, hey, she's, you know, happy, this is great, kind of a you know, happy ending in a way that I don't quite think the rest of the film sets it up for her to earn.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they clearly were hoping to make this a little bit more of a hopeful kind of an ending for the character, and like that there's room for somebody to grow out of a situation like this.
Yeah.
So I think that's where they went with it. But all right, I'm going to go with my last piece here. And this is a movie that I don't get to talk about on Piecing It Together nearly enough. But I'm going to go with Weird Al's movie UHF.
Oh my goodness.
Which is one of my all time favorites. But you know, basically, you know, the comparison between this person going on this public access kind of, you know, station and coming up with all these crazy, wacky ideas for kids, you know, skits and puppets and songs and all this weird, silly stuff for the sake of raising money through a telethon is kind of, you know, at least on screen and, you know, the way that the film plays out is kind of a similar, you know, goal for our main characters.
Sure.
Here. And even though there's so much more going on outside of that, just to that aspect of the film, I just thought it was a fun comparison piece.
That's one, another one I haven't seen in a long time, but I love.
Yeah.
Did they, maybe you remember, do they do a puppet show in UHF?
It's been a while, but if there had to have been puppets, and if nothing else, there's the, there's that like kind of CGI music video thing to the Beverly Hills song. So if nothing else, there's that in his head. So
definitely. Yeah, it has. I mean, you know, these people, the Bakers and Pat Robertson, who shows up in the film, and Falwell, they were all creating these, you know, kind of do-it-yourself television, you know, programs specifically for the, you know, conservative Christian community.
Yeah, they had a set audience that they wanted to bring in, and they wanted to probably keep it, you know, separate from the rest of the secular world.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, but it very much has that kind of do-it-yourself
totally
similarity between the two. I would probably watch UHF again before I watch this.
Yeah, UHF is one of the all-time best.
And again, not so knocking any of the performances here, you know. Chastain and Garfield, we talked about being great. Vincent D'Onofrio is always amazing.
Oh yeah, he's great too.
Even
absolutely,
in a fairly small role here, he just, you know, chews scenery.
Yeah, totally.
So it's, you know, definitely enjoyable. But yeah, I probably won't go back to it too soon.
Yeah, I would agree on that. But definitely enjoyable. I'm going to go ahead and do the finished puzzle here, and then we'll get into any closing thoughts we have on The Eyes of Tammy Faye. We talked about Citizen Kane, Leap of Faith, The Music Man, Bombshell, Stephen King horror films, Boogie Nights, Compliance, and UHF. Do you have any other thoughts that you wanted to kind of get into that we didn't get to?
Not really. I think we covered everything I had thought of and wrote down some notes for it.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, especially just, you know, mentioning again how great the performances are and, you know, and otherwise, you know, the rest of the movie, the story that it's telling, I do think it kind of lets her off the hook a little bit, but, you know, still, it is a very enjoyable movie. And I think it's been really interesting to see Michael Showalter kind of stretch out and, you know, going from wacky comedies to more straightforward comedies and now into these kind of dramatic films between this and a few years ago with The Big Sick. It's going to be interesting to see what he does continuing forward.
Yeah, I agree.
Awesome. Well, Daryl, is there another movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Oh, man. I would say the Fear Street trilogy.
Okay.
Series of Netflix horror films came out a few months ago, I believe. And they're based on R.L. Stine's book series.
Mm-hmm.
They surprised me a few times in how dark they went, but still kept a light popish tone.
Sure.
Easy to watch and you know, a lot of fun at times. But it really, like, doesn't pull any punches. There were a few
yeah
moments I gasped, which
yeah, there was a couple of we only watched the first one so far, but there was a couple of pretty good gore moments in there. So we'll eventually get around to the second and third ones, but yeah, it was pretty fun though. Absolutely. Well, right on. This was great, Daryl. What do you got going on right now with the film festival and everything else you're up to?
Yeah, we're prepping now for year number three of the Cyber Shorts Film Festival. For anybody who doesn't know, short films in a virtual reality theater, which is a lot of fun. We started it at the beginning of the COVID lockdown as film festivals and everything else was closing. You know, couldn't go to the theater. And, you know, what are we now? 2 years almost past. And I have been to the theater a few times now since quote unquote reopening. And I've only had like three other people in the theater with me a couple of those times.
Yeah, that sounds
which
about right.
It's both fun, but not the communal experience you usually get going to the movies. So anyway, yeah, we had started this for short films to be played in virtual reality, so you get to interact with the rest of the audience members, even if it's, you know, just online. It's still a little more interactive than just watching a screener,
right,
through Zoom or however else you know people are showing online. So we're going into year number three with that. We're hoping to add at least one or two more blocks of films, so expanding. Next year, we're looking at June, and we have submissions open for anybody who wants to submit short films.
Great.
For competition, which is a lot of fun.
Awesome.
The other thing I want to mention quickly is I've helped produce a short film, which is exciting. It's called Oh the Guilt, and it's a science fiction film, but it's very personal, and could almost be described as a drama. But it has that science fiction element and kind of framing, which I think makes it fun. That's currently making the rounds in the film festival circuit. Features mostly a female cast and crew, which is really cool. But we did get a cameo from Sean Astin for it, which is really cool. So once that becomes, you know, available, I'll be sharing it, you know, online. But if you're
yeah, please share it in our Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces group once it is online.
Yeah. But you know, if anybody's checking out you know, short film festivals, be on the lookout for it over the next few months.
Awesome. Well, Daryl, this was great. Thank you so much again for doing the show again, and hopefully I will get my next music video ready in time to try submitting again to your festival.
Awesome. I'd love it.
Picture it. You have to introduce yourself to a total stranger by handing them a mixtape made up of songs that tell the story of you. What songs are on the tape? Why are those songs there? Got you thinking, right? We put that question and many more to a different guest every episode on Made You a Mixtape. Life, work, and the music that makes people who they are today. Authors, musicians, broadcasters, podcasters, everyone has a soundtrack. Download and listen on all audio streaming services today. Made You a Mixtape. It's not what your songs are, it's what songs are you.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about The Eyes of Tammy Faye. That was a fun one to talk about. It's kind of a weird movie. You got to kind of ride the line as far as talking about puzzle pieces and inspirations and the whole thing that this podcast is all about. And, you know, not digging too much into the personas of Jim and Tammy Faye Baker and focusing on what it is we talk about here, which is, of course, puzzle pieces. So, yeah, hope you enjoyed that conversation. If you do like Piecing It Together, make sure you are subscribed wherever you listen to podcasts. You can, of course, find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and Pocket Cast, Good Pods, all the different podcast apps out there. Make sure you're subscribed. And if you like what we do, you can rate and review us. Leave a little 5-star rating. That's always awesome when you do that. Most importantly, share the show. Share us with all your friends and people who like podcasts. That really helps get us out in front of new listeners, and that's what I'm trying to do, isn't it? So, that's about it. As those of you who have been listening know, this past weekend, my wife Gina and I finally got to get married, and that was awesome. That was, of course, delayed because of COVID. It was supposed to be last year. We had to delay the marriage twice, or the wedding, not the marriage. We had to delay the wedding twice because of COVID, but we were finally able to have the whole ceremony and do the vows and have the party and the whole thing with family and friends, and it was amazing. And you'll, you know, see pictures. I'm sure I'll be posting something on social media at Piecing Pod. You should be following us. And yeah, it was just an awesome time, and I am happy to now be through that and to be able to move forward and watch a lot of movies and podcast about them and continue to grow this show, work on some more music, all the kind of stuff that I do, but I'm just so happy that the whole event turned out great. So that's just a little bit about my life. Let's close this thing out with a piece of music like I always do. And usually I play a piece of my instrumental music from one of my, instrumental albums or from like a film that I've recently scored. But whenever the film leans into religious type stuff, I go back to my old comedy rap group Fakakta, which is a Jewish comedy rap group. It's now defunct. It's no longer. It does not exist anymore. But we did make two pretty funny albums of ridiculous, silly Jewish rap songs. And this is from our first album, Lock Stars. It is a song called Challah, if you hear me. Not exactly the kind of Christian stuff that maybe Tammy Faye would have been singing, but religious nonetheless, but not really, actually. Anyway, this is Challah, if you hear me, from our album Lock Stars. Hope you enjoy it. We'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you doing? Are you ready to get hot?
Hot, baby, hot.
Yo, I'm Jewish Dave.
Yo, this is MC Ethel.
Holla.
And we've got Avi the OG.
If you hear me, holla.
Bringing it to you on the ones and twos, baby.
Holla. If you hear me, holla.
C-H-A-L-L-A, if you spell it that way. This is what my people say till the break of day. When I break my mind, so Jewish days gonna make you holler, gonna make you holla. We're F-A-C-O-C-K-T-A. You can call me a schmuck because that's how I play.
I'm MC Ethel, the kosher kitty. We've got Avi the OG and the Jewish ditty.
I'm a pity the fool that shows up late to shoot.
You drank all the Manischewitz.
Man, that ain't cool.
We're going kosher on your ass now.
Ask us how you can break the bread, cause this is what she said. She said,
holla, if you hear me, holla.
Temple too, it's just the life of a Jewish rapper with mad flow. And yeah, I do want some bacon on that potato. It's just my fate, yo, to rock the mic. All you sucker MCs, yo, can take a hike. Yo, I'm trying to find a shiksa to marry, cause the only curls in my hair are by Jerry.
I was a junior cantor when I was 10. I swore I'd never sing Hebrew again.
I went to Jew camp, they tried to get me to play sports, but I was only interested in getting in a girl's shorts. We got Avi the OG on the ones and twos. He's an orthodox gangster with attitude. Straight to the top, even though Gibson can't stop us from making the bread. Cause she said,
holla, if you hear me, holla.
Holla, if you hear me,
holla. If you hear me, holla.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.